Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. I'm here today with Tim Heuer, our XAML expert and knowledge base, to answer all the questions I can dream up today. Tim, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Now, Tim, not everybody knows who you are, if you can imagine such a situation. Tell us, who are you?
I am one of the many program managers on what we call the Windows Developer Experience team, which is the team responsible for creating the developer platform for Windows apps. And I specifically have been working the past couple of years on delivering the XAML story of the UI framework for Windows 8.
So you wrote Visual Studio?
No, no, hardly. Visual Studio is actually, you know, obviously a solid partner of ours, No, we did not. Yeah. They contributed for us, and we shared requirements. How about that?
There you go. That's nice. You share hallways. We use the
yes.
same bathroom. It's great.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, Tim. Tell me. Let's talk. I love the fact that we're going to be talking about XAML, first of all. I mean, I'm a real fan of XAML. I know you are, too. It's an exciting thing. Not everybody understands or necessarily knows the lineage of XAML, and we all kind of can trace it back to WPF, but can you kind of give us the brief history of XAML and Microsoft?
Sure. You mentioned WPF, which is kind of some of the origins. In fact, if we you know, use code names, we go back a little bit earlier, we know XAML's origins came from Avalon.
Yeah.
Which is the original product, which oddly enough started in the IE team. A little tidbit mm-hmm. there. It eventually grew into what we know as the Windows Presentation Foundation. That is kind of the declarative way of creating UI for Windows applications. You know, kind of the next generation of Windows Forms or, you know, that type of GUI style. Application development. And,
right.
you know, XAML is a very declarative-based language, a lot of flexibility in re-templating is a term that we use to, you know, redefine the UI, whereas, you know, a button has a certain definition, but if you don't like that definition, you can certainly change it.
Anything you want, that's right.
Anything
cool.
you want, yeah. And then so as WPF continued to exist, you know, we start looking at different market factors and different literal form factors, and a couple things kind of fell out of that and continue to be like UI frameworks. Most notably is Silverlight and Windows
yep.
Phone. Silverlight coming before Windows Phone, and that was kind of a big hoorah of being able to – I remember the first a demonstration of Silverlight, which was then called WPFE,
yeah.
was showing a linear diagonal gradient in the browser, and it was like that was supposed to be the awesome demonstration
Ooh.
Of yeah, exactly. and frankly,
what
do
you stand for, Tim?
You know, everyone keeps saying that WPFE never stood for WPF everywhere. I don't really know.
I
wasn't on the team
you.
Then, but like you know, I'm gonna go with that definition. I don't care what anyone says. It sounds good enough.
Cooler. It's better
but,
than
yeah, internet. You know, I remember seeing the gradient brush and thinking, this is it. Like, what is so important here? But, you know, we know Silverlight grew and got popular and then extended to is the primary app development platform for the phone. And,
right.
you know, as Windows 8 was looking at UI frameworks and, you know, how would you develop these modern applications, XAML was chosen as one of the UI frameworks as well there. What's also interesting to note that I like to point out about XAML is
yeah.
We generally think about it as a UI framework only. However, it really is a markup language that's, you know, a declarative way of describing both UI but also behavior. And Workflow Foundation, as an example, uses XAML. There's significant portions of Visual Studio outside of literally using XAML for UI, but that use XAML for business logic and business rule automation and things like that. So it's very flexible.
Yeah. It's funny, the developer community, you, myself, or anybody, stops talking about XAML for a month and they think it's vanished, right?
That's right,
little do
yeah.
they, I mean, you just have to pay attention to see just how embedded it is into all of our different products. I mean,
right.
you were following like the single path up to Windows 8, but it also kind of cut over to Windows Embedded and it also kind of cut over to Xbox Live. I mean, there's XAML's freaking everywhere. It's unbelievable.
That's right, yeah.
Almost.
And it may not, you know, the APIs may not be 100% the same across the board. You know, I think we've gotten smart from the WPF days of like, you know, how do we make it lean and mean and approachable and still maintain that flexibility without being, you know, extremely verbose and have, you know, the whole kitchen sink when everybody just needs the faucet.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, wonder what that faucet is in your analogy. Fascinating. Yeah, that's right. I always keep looking for the kitchen sink sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, we've got a long heritage. XAML's 10 years old. Now, have you ever heard of Jupyter, Project Jupyter?
I have.
Yeah, tell us what that is.
Jupyter was the code name for the Windows 8 XAML framework.
Yeah.
So it's the it was funny watching, you know, internally it's always funny watching the press coverage of certain code names, and everybody got Jupyter like way wrong. They thought it was, you know, the Windows 8 platform completely when it was really one piece of it. It was fun to watch.
Yeah.
But that was the code name that we chose for this project.
Yeah, I think we're pretty safe. I don't think the planet of Jupyter will ask us to stop using that name.
Yes, we have not received a cease and desist letter from the offices of J&J Enterprises,
right.
Esquire.
They don't use FedEx. They send them through exactly.
Maybe it's on its way. Maybe it's currently in Mars and they're waiting for Curiosity to come back. We don't know.
Yeah, they're going to hand it to Curiosity. Yeah. And that thing about XAML is all they find, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk seriously for a second. XAML is one of the languages, or not languages, but one of the technologies we can choose to build Windows 8 apps. Obviously, there's JavaScript and HTML. Obviously, there's C#, Visual Basic, and now C++, and all using XAML, which is pretty cool.
Right.
And there's also Direct3D. Not that we would forget that, but developers are really going to choose between the first two, between JavaScript and HTML, between C# and XAML, or VB or C++. When they're picking between, and we just take them to the UI level, picking between HTML and picking between XAML. Obviously, if you know one and you don't know the other, it's an easy choice. But if you know them both or you don't know either, what are some of the things you recommend to people who are thinking about choosing those technologies?
I think it really depends on the type of app that you're looking at as well. One of the premises of developing the UI frameworks for Windows 8 and the Windows Runtime APIs was that it really should be just a language choice decision.
Yeah.
Versus you can do this 10 times better in JavaScript and you know, you can't do it at all in XAML. And, you know, I think for the most part, we hit that goal. So, you know, it should be about what you feel you're going to be most productive in, what you're most familiar with, or, you know, perhaps the type, like I said, the type of application.
Yeah.
One of the things that I'd point out is if you're heavily, you know, using a lot of HTML content, you know, I think you should look at the HTML JavaScript platform first, because it naturally makes more sense. You're probably going to be doing a lot of DOM manipulation, and it just makes more sense to stay in that world. We can show HTML content in XAML. However, we're not optimized for that to be kind of an app-specific portion of the HTML. So that is one thing that I always like to point out for someone to consider. But by and large, the frameworks are expose the same APIs. They expose the same UI controls. We do have some gaps in XAML controls, but they're not, you know, insurmountable. However, you know, you should be able to create the same experience in both. What's interesting is, like, if you wanted to create more of a first-person shooter application and that type of thing, and you're doing, like, some heavy shader processing, you know, maybe that's when you're going to be looking at the DirectX side of things. And then
I want to stop you, Tim. Now,
sure.
Now,
sure.
All right, so we got Direct3D for the high-end games. I mean, we all know that that's there, right? That's going to be awesome. And the fact that it's there and you can do it as native means that we're going to have a lot of great titles coming, right? I mean, no doubt. Okay, back to the developers. So you said earlier, it kind of depends on the app that you're building. I mean, let's say your technologies are even and everybody knows everything. Let's be specific. What types of apps might make you choose JavaScript?
I think, like I said, so I think heavily apps that heavily rely on HTML content that exists, I think that's one thing that I would put in that bucket for sure.
Okay.
Or at a minimum, I think that would be kind of like your first right of refusal to look at that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So
I see a lot of games in the store. Or what do games typically fall to?
Games are actually a pretty easy. You know, taking aside the DirectX, so I think, you know, you're kind of referring to casual games a little bit, right?
Yeah,
there.
That's right, just casual.
So, I think we're actually seeing a pretty fair balance there, frankly.
Is that right?
There's some great, you look at Cut the Rope and what they had to do with the JavaScript platform, and they delivered, you know, the Cut the Rope experience, which is a really fun game, and that's all HTML JavaScript, and that's a great experience. I'm, you know, pleased with what they were able to come up with there.
So I'll pause you there.
Yep.
So I'm going to try and get the point out that you were just making is, so the first thing to take away is a JavaScript app, obviously, we've proven can seriously perform, right? So that's one thing, right? All right, let's go with the next point you were headed to. I don't want to interrupt you, but I want to make sure that I'm tracking along.
Yeah, you know, you made a good point. Is that, you know, when we think of HTML, I'll just extend that a little bit. When we think of HTML and JavaScript as a platform, you know, it's not just kind of any HTML that you would render in any browser. You know, like IE did a ton of improvements to get the performance and the response out of the engine, so that HTML is a first-class developer platform, you know, for Windows developers. So it's very important to understand that.
Does XAML perform?
XAML, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the fundamentals that we did in this Windows release, is that if you think about some of the iterations that we've had with XAML over time, namely that, you know, if we kind of draw a parallel to Silverlight, where Silverlight, one of the goals was cross-platform, and so everything that Silverlight did had to be cross-platform. So we kind of had this platform-agnostic layer, and we had to kind of ship our own subsystems in certain things. But being a part of the Windows platform, like, we don't have to do that anymore. We know that the Windows subsystems are available. We know that Direct3D is available, and so that when we do our rendering, it will be there, and so that we can rely on using, you know, the performance and the foundations that exist in Windows as a part of our framework. We don't have to, you know, worry about developing those things again, because they exist there. So yeah, we've done a lot of tuning with XAML to get a lot of the perf on it, and we've had to, frankly, right? Because there's a lot of applications that demand that level of performance, just by nature of saying we're extending XAML to C++ developers. I mean, C++ developers will tell you, like, their main pitch is power and performance. So if we couldn't deliver power and performance for them, like, you know, we failed.
Yeah.
That was a huge motivating factor, was changing how we do a lot of our pipeline and rendering logic to be very Windows specific and very highly optimized.
There's a lot of developers, there's a lot of Microsoft developers who've spent their career kind of mastering XAML, and they're going to feel very comfortable now moving into XAML on Windows 8 and being able to reuse the skills that they've already got. And frankly, there's a lot of developers who haven't spent their career mastering XAML who will be surprised, I think, coming in and how quickly and easily it will be to pick up XAML and kind of take advantage of the power it has. Now, let me ask you some specific questions here. Let's say I'm a developer who... I've spent my whole career writing Silverlight or WPF apps. I know XAML inside and out. I'm going to go write my Windows 8 app. What am I going to experience? What are some of the differences that I'm going to experience first?
Fundamentally, the concepts of XAML are the same throughout anywhere where you see XAML. So the concepts of, you know, the markup represents a type, attached properties, dependency properties, the binding engine.
Resource dictionaries.
Yeah. Those are all the same. Where you will find some subtle differences when you say, I'm a Silverlight developer and now I'm going to do some Windows 8 stuff. We did make some changes that have, you know, they're bumps in the road. They're not things that you can't get over. One of the most notable ones is we don't support the CLR namespace, XML namespace when you're using controls or user controls. Primary reason there is, again, we extend to the native platform where there is no CLR, and it kind of just didn't make sense to support mapping a namespace to an assembly that, you know, may or may not exist. And we also had some constraints in the WinRT API guidelines that we had to follow with the rules of what WinRT is.
So those namespace changes, just to make it practical, user developers who take their application, they just copy-paste, their namespaces won't work out of the blue, right? They're going to have
to
go in and make some changes. All right.
That's correct, yeah.
What are some other of the big ones that you're seeing developers kind of hit and then overcome?
The other changes that we have is we do have some new experiences to optimize for, you know, the Windows 8 experiences. So where you may have been used to using some existing controls for displaying grid-based information, you know, we don't have, like, data grid for an example. We don't have a representation of data grid in this kind of modern UI language.
Yeah.
Instead, we have some new paradigms like what we call the grid view, which is kind of the same experience you see on the Windows 8 start screen. Maybe we don't have a grid view, but we're giving you these new experiences that are touch optimized, that have the animations built in, that were, you know, are accomplished in a performant way.
So I think if I'm a developer going through the toolbox, there could be some things missing, but they're missing on purpose, right? Those are,
exactly.
Missing because you're writing a Windows 8 app now, not a WPF app, not a Silverlight app. So we're changing the controls around a little to make sure that you stay inside that paradigm as best you can, and we kind of built those controls. I say we because I'm part of your team. I always think, <Yeah. laughs> because you are helping them kind of deliver what they make it easier in them, right? So they don't have to build in all this plumbing and stuff that you already put in to
exactly.
all the list box space.
Exactly.
Okay, so hit me with one more. What's another thing I as a developer might find startling?
I think probably, I don't know if startling is the word, but where we've seen some exciting challenges, how about that, is in the .NET space. So, you know, where you're a Silverlight developer, you're a WPF developer, and you're used to certain base class libraries or a certain way that the .NET framework looks and behaves. If you're a C-sharp developer and you're writing a Windows 8 app, you're now using what we call the .NET Framework Core, which is, if anyone's really familiar with what the .NET Framework means, it's really a set of reference assemblies, right? So it actually is the full CLR, but it's the core, it represents a set of reference assemblies that are, for lack of a better term, safe to use for store apps. And there were some changes in .NET 4.5 that were kind of refactored that trip some people up, mainly in the reflection space, that have been causing some people to complain a little bit. But again, it's not like things that were significantly deleted or things like that. It's just there were some things that were moved around that will, you know, if you have existing code that you want to try to share, will cause you to do some if-def. Definition.
Like file I/O stuff, right?
File I/O is, and so we remove some redundancies, which you point out is a good example, where WinRT has an API to do file operations. Well, why do you need a WinRT way of doing it and a base class library way of doing it? And so we favored the WinRT APIs of doing that. However, what's interesting that a lot of people don't realize is what the CLR team did was expose a significant amount of extension methods on the WinRT APIs to kind of bring you back into the .NET
bridge
fold.
The gap a little.
Yeah, bridge the gap. So like if you're dealing with storage file in WinRT APIs and you open a storage file, you actually get back what's called a random access stream.
Right.
And that doesn't exist in the .NET framework. So what they did was you normally work with what? The stream object.
That's right.
And so the CLR team add an extension method on random access stream that you can, if you have a random access stream, you can kind of to stream it, so to speak, and get the .NET object that you're used to working with and, you know, work with in StreamReader or things like that. And that's just one example. File.io does some other things as well. Reflection actually has a bunch of those as well.
Yeah. And you will see some things that maybe there is a small gap, but in general, I think it's a fair takeaway to say it may be different for you, but there is something to account for it, right? We've made it possible to do almost everything a developer can dream up. And there's certainly room for us to grow, but I mean, in general, a developer's going to feel very confident, wouldn't you say?
That's true. Yeah, I think familiar and confident, and there might be some things that you have to change in your code, but in the long run, it should give you a little bit more portability because other platforms are moving towards that model as well.
Yeah, and specifically, I mean, we've kind of been talking about C# more than XAML here, but I mean, that's for those .NET developers. I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of .NET developers, and they all get to kind of experience. And I guess at a fundamental level, it's not, you don't change the way you think. It's just maybe in a different API now that you need to.
That's right. Maybe you have to do an extra dot to get to it in the namespace, you know.
Yeah, something like that. Not two dots, though. Two
yes.
dots in a row. Yeah. None of that business. That's sloppy. Okay. Now, we talked about data grid, and the grid view is really where we're headed with that. There are a couple control gaps. What are some of the control gaps on the XAML side right now?
I think the most notable is when you look at the UX guidelines in creating a Windows Store app, you know, there's these probably the most notable one is this concept of a flyout. You see this term flyout being used fairly regularly.
Yep.
And in JavaScript apps, in the WinJS library, there's actually a proper flyout.
Just a flyout control. Yeah.
Flyout control. And so in XAML, we don't have, you know, angle bracket flyout. But we do have the primitives that basically make up the flyout.
Mm-hmm.
So which in our world is pop up with the light dismiss behavior. That's the fundamentals of a flyout. The third part of that being just the positioning logic.
Right.
So we do have you know, when we looked at you know, what we were doing and priorities and what we had to finish, you know, that certainly was one thing we would have liked to had, but you know, given that we had the primitives to make those experiences work, you know, we opted not to do those at this time. And certainly those gaps we're looking to address in a future release.
Yeah, and these gaps really are just current gaps, right? I mean, this is just round one.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, when we talk about gaps, we're saying gaps relative to the HTML JavaScript platform. So I just want to make it clear, it's like, you know, there's probably some gaps between Silverlight and Windows 8 that, you know, DataGrid is a good example. Like, you know, we're not looking to address DataGrid right now.
Right. And we may never, to be honest.
Right.
Although there's a lot of third-party control vendors out there, who knows what those guys will dream up.
Absolutely. I mean, in fact, if you look at almost the first controls that almost every third-party control vendor is coming out with is charting.
Yeah.
And something that neither the HTML platform doesn't have a WinJS chart control, but of course you have Canvas and you can draw vectors.
Yep.
But certainly you could do that in XAML as well, but there's no you lose some data binding aspects to it and things like that. And so you look at things like all the, you know, your typical go-to control vendors, it's very interesting.
Yep.
Like every single one of them has, you know, charting
it's first.
Kind of first one there. So
we
have a great ecosystem with our third-party control vendors on the XAML side, and don't anticipate that slowing down at all.
Tim, did you know that there is a moon to Jupiter called Callisto?
I do, yes. Largest moon of Jupiter, yes.
Yeah. And did you know there's a project in GitHub called Callisto?
Yes, there is.
Yeah. Tell me something about it.
Callisto is a collaboration with myself and a couple other people in the community, a couple other XAML MVPs that just kind of was a side project on my own time as I looked at apps that I was developing for Windows 8 and, you know, saw some of the gaps that we had in our platform and was, you know, trying to encapsulate them in my app. And then I decided, hey, you know, maybe this is helpful for other people. So Callisto wasn't designed as a toolkit forward. It was more of an extraction out of apps that I had had built. And there's certainly some design flaws as a result of that. But
it's a great place to go steal code, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, if you're like, I wonder how to do a flyout. What do you think is the biggest hitter in Callisto? What's the control that most developers find first in there?
I think it's flyout and settings flyout.
Now, I'm a Windows 8 developer, but you know, I've built Windows Phone apps, I've built Silverlight, I've built WPF apps. And in Windows Phone, we had Windows Phone release, the SDK, and then, you know, not too long later, we had the toolkit come out, and that solved a lot of these gaps for us. And can I expect a toolkit for XAML on Windows 8?
Probably not delivered from the Windows team. One of the principles that we have in Windows is that, you know, what you need as a developer should be in the platform, and if it's not, and you know how we release software in Windows is through Windows. It's not through third-party toolkits that are from Windows as well. It kind of doesn't make sense from us as a resource standpoint how we do things is be able to say, oh, we're going to take the same team that's responsible for doing the next release and carve them off to do, you know, a toolkit. You know, we should just be building that into the plan for the next release. And those are the type of things that we look at. And it's not, for our team right now, it's not resource efficient to do that type of thing. In addition, it's more of a philosophical change than what you've seen in the past as well.
Yeah. Now, so I talk to a lot of developers like you do, right, going around to hackathons and events, and I get a couple common questions. And just let's just set the record straight. You are the guy to do it. I'll say something. You just tell me whether or not this is true.
Okay.
There is no whiteboard or notepad somewhere in the deep bowels of Microsoft development with a date written on it when WPF, Silverlight, and Windows 8 will all be in parity as far as features.
That is true. There's no date anywhere.
How many times have I been asked, when will, you know, until everything exists? That's not, it's fundamentally, they're meant for different types of things. I mean, we're going to see a lot of parity, don't you think?
I think we will. I mean, if you start thinking about, you know, the phone as probably the closest example here, you know, what will the phone start looking like, and, you know, what will other platforms start looking like? And I think, you know, what we've done with the XAML platform in Windows 8 is a good move. You know, we've taken a very strategic approach. We haven't tried to throw the kitchen sink in there. And I think, you know, we can, by doing so, we create a lean framework that we can very strategically grow over time as needed, but that's, you know, portable hopefully to other endpoints as well.
Yeah. So that's my second question I get all the time. So I'm going to write all this in XAML. We know that the JavaScript apps are not going to be in Windows Phone 8, right? That's already public. We know XAML apps will. How much of my XAML in Windows 8 is going to be portable over to Windows Phone?
So the next release of Windows Phone 8 is still kind of like a Silverlight-based model. So, you know, it doesn't allow you to extend to native code development and things like that. So you should still be looking at the Windows Phone 8 development model as, you know, an extension of what it is today versus taking anything that Windows 8 has for it yet. So the same concepts of code sharing, that if that's desirable for you to highly achieve, you know, shared code between Windows Phone and Windows 8, then, you know, creating a really great architecture is probably going to be something that you want to think in advance about. And like, usually the view model approach is probably the best one to choose. That way you just look at, you know, what shows on the screen in the phone is just a different view than what's shown.
Keep it all abstracted away.
Yeah, and your view models could be shared, especially when you look at things like the portable class libraries. You could have a common binary representation of your view model, and then the view is just, you know, different nuances of XAML that are optimized for the user experience, right? I shouldn't expect my 320-pixel phone application to look well on my 30-inch monitor, right? They're designed for different experiences.
That's right. I mean, if your XAML happens to be reusable between the two, then that's just candy for you. But that's not the goal, right? I mean, you're going to want to cater to the different form factors specifically.
Right. And there's perhaps like some ways you can even get reusable XAML, but you know, in my opinion, I don't think it should be the goal. But you know, it is possible. It's just going to be a lot more work.
Yeah. Okay, so a lot of great stuff inside XAML for Windows 8. You guys, you're part of the team. You know what's been done. What's some of the candy that you like? Like, what is really, like, great?
In XAML or in the whole platform?
Nope, just XAML.
Just XAML. Okay. I think, you know what I think is really great is that...
What's really great?
The animations that we've asked developers to accomplish to meet the guidelines of an application are all built into the platform. And so as before, where you've had to say, oh, I got to create this storyboard and move these things, you know, instead now when you use grid view, you just get the default animations. When you use a list view and items get added, you get the default animations, and they're optimized, they're independently animated, you know, so they come out with a great performance, and you don't have to think about it, right? I don't have to think about, am I doing the right thing? You know, when I use an app bar, the app bar listens to the right gesture and it comes up animating the right way. So that as a fundamental concept of, like, you know, we've done a lot in the platform to just kind of do the right thing for developers. I think that's...
And developer apps just look like a natural part of the ecosystem now because they match.
Right, exactly. And I think that's kind of undervalued at some level, that, you know, how much work went into just making sure that those areas are optimized for the user experience as well as, you know, taking performance into account.
Yeah, and I think that's worth that's a good segue into an interesting new feature in the Windows 8 XAML stack, that it's is this dependency based animations. It's new, right? Where you get to go say, I've forgotten the actual property, but basically allow animation on properties that can't be GPU accelerated, basically.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, and actually Hamid on our team did a good blog post on the Windows Developer blog about this topic in general, about the concepts of independent animations and dependent animations, and what we do in the framework to do the independent animations for you, or when you're creating your own storyboards, understanding what values you're choosing will be part of that independent animation path versus suddenly happening on the UI thread and might cause some, you know, some responsiveness issues for your users. So, that falls into the knowledge is power category of understanding, you know, what the framework is doing for you, so that when you're creating your own custom animations, which a lot of the time you may not have to even do, but when you're doing them, you know, to understand like, oh, okay, if I actually chose, you know, opacity versus margin, this is the effect it's going to have. You know, so what is the better property that I should be animating, because the framework's going to do it in an independent nature for me and not, you know, tie up the UI thread.
And I think it's cool to make a developer explicitly give permission to let their app potentially impact CPU performance.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. Okay, so here's a nerd question for you. It looks to me like the collection view source has changed in Windows 8 implementation. You know what I'm talking about? Compared to Silverlight, compared to WPF. What's going on?
I assume, are you referring to like, you know, the sorting and grouping type things?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. As we look at kind of the primary focus of Windows 8 and consumer apps and, you know, how collection view source and collections existed in Silverlight and really how they were used as well, it kind of dictates some of the design. So if you think about Silverlight and how the collection sources were used, a lot of in conjunction with like RIA services and things that could actually consume those properties and understand how to render them on the screen. You know, some of those things just didn't make a sense for us. So we do look at like collection view source as a good pattern that people should use in Windows 8 to kind of serve as your primary source of data and give you kind of some optimized data binding. But yeah, it is not the same intent tied to certain other UI features that exist in other platforms.
Yeah, I have a lot of, they're not debates, they're conversations with people, you know, between all the different choices of technologies in Windows 8. I love talking about XAML. There's so much power, there's so much coolness to it, you know, and I think in a lot of ways XAML is kind of what HTML wishes it was. You know, just so much neat. I mean, just showing off data binding alone is just breathtaking to me. I mean, the things that you can do with so little work, so little code behind, the implementation of model view model and all the state, I mean, it's just the greatest thing. All right, let me ask you, you're on the team. You know what's in, you know what's out. What do you hope personally that's in the backlog that you hope bubbles to the top soon?
Well, I think we have, we've heard from customers about some of the gaps of the control. So, you know, we're certainly looking to address those gaps. And I think, you know, that falls into some possible low-hanging fruit things. You know, we're not finalized on what we're committing to at any point right now. But, you know, that's something to me, like, it'd be nice to fill those gaps just to kind of, you know, as a turn red to green, right? Put the check marks in there.
Right.
And then the other thing that I'd like to see us address is kind of a couple areas. I'd like to see us kind of look at some of the UI virtualization aspects of how people are rendering data so that they don't have to think about like, oh, maybe I shouldn't bind 1,000 items because I may get some exception. You know, it'd be nice if the platform could be a little bit smarter in that regard and do some things more intelligently for the developer. So I'd like to see us address that. The other one is web content in general. If anyone's used a web view, you know it is, so from a technical implementation, it is a different HWind, and so you see some of the, depending on how you're using it, you could possibly see what we call some airspace issues where, you know, it's Z-index, it owns the Z-index order, and so it's usually on top of things.
On top of everything.
On top of everything, yeah. And so I'd love for us to see that because I think, you know, address that because I think web content, you know, if I'm building an RSS reader, most likely it's going to be web content. And it'd be nice to have a better story of rendering web content within a XAML app that allows me to interact with it as well, you know, do DOM manipulations if I have to or, I don't know, I think there's some opportunity to improve that story for us there.
And to be fair, I mean, there are still ways to address all those in the current framework too, right? I mean, working backwards, the issue, you can use WebView often to kind of solve some of the problems around the web content, and you can certainly use third-party controls to solve a lot of these gaps. But yeah, it would be, and virtualization, I suppose, just smarter developers.
Yeah, well, you know what's interesting about virtualization is if people remembered in Build, like, we did allow extensibility in our virtualization panels.
Yeah,
and we actually removed that functionality in the final release because we didn't feel that we were able to fully support what people may or may not do. You know, when you're developing a framework, you try to think of every possible scenario and you kind of collect information, but we were at a point in those panels where we were saying, hey, we've designed them and developed them for our specific uses. We're not sure that we're going to get the right implementation with, you know, something that somebody else would use. And so
better to be safe than sorry.
Yeah, we didn't want to create a situation of a compat issue or a deprecation issue. And so we took the approach of
it so that now you can't change it and make it
better. Yeah, exactly. Right. So we took the approach of let's just not enable that capability, and we need to think about that a lot more.
Yeah, that's great. I think it's really great. All right, Tim, remember when you installed RTM?
Yep.
What was the first app you installed?
The first app I installed...
Not Office.
Not Office. Oh, okay. The first Windows 8 app, I assume you...
Yeah.
Okay. I think the first app I installed was probably one of our internal test apps, actually, because my kids have been so used to playing them. But we had... so in our XAML test suite, we had ported Zero Gravity.
You have Zero Gravity?
My son loves playing that game, so that's usually the first ones I put on as our test apps. But from the store, one of the apps
My daughter has not forgiven me for upgrading her because Zero Gravity's gone. That's all the way back to developer preview.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I have a feeling it may show up in the store soon.
You have a feeling?
Yeah. Probably
no
not
forward-looking statements.
No forward-looking statements, yeah.
Of course. Okay, XAML developers. If you want to be a XAML developer, Visual Studio for sure. If you want to build Windows 8 applications, you have to build on Windows 8 using Visual Studio 2012. And which version of Visual Studio?
All you need is the Express version to build Windows 8 apps. So if all you're doing is building Windows 8 apps, you know, you'll be able to build, use C++, JavaScript, XAML using the Express version. If you want to do what we were talking about earlier about some code sharing with other platforms and you need the portable class libraries, you'll need the Pro Plus, what we call Pro Plus, so like Pro and Ultimate.
The next level up, basically.
The next level up, yep.
Yeah.
To be able to get to the portable class libraries there.
And as well as using Team Foundation Server, some of the architectural and UML features, you just move on up to Ultimate. Some of the testing features are up there as well. Yep. But the base starting point is Express, and the base starting price of Express is pretty affordable.
That's right. It is very affordable.
It's free. Yes. That's right. Tim, seriously, I can't thank you enough for being on with us. It is awesome to talk about XAML. I only wish I knew as much as you did about it. It's so much fun. It makes me proud to talk about it. It's exciting. I think when I talk to developers about it, there's so much enthusiasm. And, you know, we did have kind of this silent period where we stopped talking about it. And they were all, like, wringing their hands, wondering what was happening. And now we're back out with guns blazing. They're excited again, using the skills they've used their entire career, built up mastery of. And I think it's a lot of fun. We're still starting to see tons of Windows 8 apps built in XAML, really leveraging it. And to me, it's really exciting. I mean, it's a huge power at their disposal, taking what they've already learned and using it again. You, the viewer, take the skills that you've learned. If you haven't tried XAML, don't think that you can't pick it up. It's a very straightforward and powerful language that you can use for declaring your UI. And if they have any questions, they can contact you directly, can't they, Tim? I mean, they can contact you you have a Twitter account?
Yep. Always happy to help. I'm very active on the forums, as is other members of our team and our support staff as well, as is the community, frankly. There's been awesome community support on the forums helping out developers too.
And what's your home address? So in case people have really hard questions,
just one Microsoft Way.
Yeah, that's where I. Yeah, exactly. You've got a cot there. You know,
that's right.
All right. Thanks again, Tim, and thank you for watching. This has been Microsoft Dev Radio.